The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, Patrick Cox here, and it's that time again, World Cup time, samba soundtrack time. Sorry, no samba. Long-time listeners to the pod, though, might recognize this piece of music. I played it 4 years ago, during the last World Cup, but I never talked about it on the big show. Well, today I did, briefly. Coming up is a longer pod version of my chat with the world's Marco Werman and William Troop. Here's Marco.
For American soccer fans, watching the World Cup over the next month should be pretty easy. ABC, ESPN, and Univision are planning to air all 52 matches taking place in Brazil. But there was a time when fans had to work a lot harder to watch soccer in America. And I got two guys here with me who remember that time. The world's in-house soccer expert, William Troop, and our equally expert and football-crazy language editor, Patrick Cox. Welcome to you both.
Hey, Marco.
We'll get to the soccer versus football debate in a moment, those words. I shall put the question on the table and, like a grenade, then leave the studio. First, though, both of you guys are immigrants who came here from countries where soccer is king on television. Not exactly the case when you got here to the U.S., though. Give us a comparison. Where were you, William, prior to getting to the U.S., and what was it like getting here and trying to find soccer on television?
Well, I came to the U.S. in the early 80s from Italy, and you got to understand what was going on in Italy at the time. 1982, Italy won the World Cup, and all those games of that World Cup were, you can watch all of them on Italian TV. Then in 1986 World Cup, which was in Mexico, I was living in D.C. at the time in Washington, and I remember having to, you know, play with my rabbit ears to see how, if I could get the right reception for this new channel in Spanish called SIN, which today is Univision. Basically, my reception sucked, so I missed a lot of that World
Blew
Cup.
That off. What about you, Patrick? Where did you come from, and what was it like getting here and trying to get a channel that had soccer?
Well, I came from the cradle of football, England, the place where soccer started, but they got overtaken by just about every single other country on earth. I come over here, my first World Cup is 1990, and it's a similar situation. Even by then, it became clear to me pretty early on that if I wanted to watch the World Cup and enjoy it with friends and, you know, have a sense of community and chat with people and just get the buzz, I needed to go back to England.
I mean, I remember the tension when the World Cup came to the United States in 94. Despite having played in the World Cup as host, the U.S. was kind of like a fish out of water. They wanted to change the game into four quarters to squeeze in more commercials. I mean, that was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember that debate, and it was kind of cute from my perspective because it's like you Americans can talk about it all you want, but FIFA, the governing body for soccer, is never going to go for that. They never did. They never will. Even today, soccer matches are aired with the same formula, basically. You know, a little bit of an ad in the top, you know, this part of the game is brought to you commercial-free by so-and-so. And that's it. I mean, no interruption. So it's still the way it is today. And TV has adapted. I mean, ESPN and Univision and everybody else, they've adapted.
Well, you guys have adapted, too. Let me just compliment you, because you now call it soccer and not football, despite where you came from. So let me place that grenade on the table now. Patrick, you're the world's language editor. Why do we call it soccer when you Brits and everyone else, it seems, besides Americans, call it football?
Well, yeah, this is funny because it actually started in England. 1863 is when a group of people met. There were two versions of football taking place at the time, rugby football and what became known as association football. Now, the SOC and association became, over time, soccer. It really only became known as soccer in countries that had another game called football,
gotcha.
Like this country, like in Ireland, like in Australia. But back in England, nobody really needed to call it soccer because there was only one football. Rugby was called rugby, football was called football.
So what do the English think today of the word soccer? Is it just kind of indignance?
There's a little bit of contemptuous, that's what the Americans call it. But that's a rewriting of history.
Another linguistic thing I want to ask. William, fans like to call soccer the beautiful game. Where did that come from?
Well, actually, that might be another example of something that the Brits might have started, but they lost control of it. There's some reference to a couple of British commentators or writers having used the phrase sometime in the past of the game, but nobody else really used that until A certain guy by the name of Pelé used it in the title of his autobiography. And this was after Pelé came here to the U.S. to play soccer with the Cosmos, people might remember. He came out with his autobiography and called it My Life and the Beautiful Game. And really, it is from that point on that people have called it not just the beautiful game, the phrase in English, but also the phrase in Portuguese, Jogo Bonito, is how you might just say in one phrase how people aspire to play good soccer these days.
How people aspire to play Brazilian soccer, you might say.
Well, if they manage to play it, they might win.
What about other colorful terms associated with the beautiful game that you like, William?
There's this really colorful term that people use in Italy and has since been used outside to describe how Italians play soccer. Fairly or not, that's another conversation. And it's called catenaccio. Catena is a chain in Italian, and it describes the way Italians play defensive soccer. It's like you put a chain around the opposition and don't let them play, destroy their ability to play. And for many years, the Italian teams played that way, but it just remains this thing that, you know, other nationalities use to, like, this Italian soccer. Oh, they play catenaccio. All they can do is destroy.
It's a fantastic image, though.
And then I have to mention just the term that I think came out of the last World Cup in 2010 when Spain won, and that's their tiki-taka play, which is this way of just doing these little short passes over and over and over and over and kind of lull the opposition into sleep, and then tack, you go for the goal.
And the term is taka-taka?
Tiki-taka.
Tiki-taka. Patrick, I know you're kind of in love with an Ivory Coast player who has actually lent himself to a musical phrase now.
I'm just this much away from being in love with him, let's say. His name is Didier Drogba. He's now 36 years old. So this is going to be his last World Cup. And in 2006, if you remember, there was a civil war taking place in Ivory Coast at the time. Didier Drogba made a big speech that a lot of people believe helped end that civil war. And as a result of that, his cult status just rose through the ceiling all across West Africa. And this term arose, Drogbacity, the state of being Drogba. It's the spirit of being positive, of skillful, of having great timing. And it very much refers to both soccer and events off the field. And there was, of course, a dance, a Drogbacity dance that went with this good feeling.
Well, the world's Patrick Cox and William Troop, you have both demonstrated incredible Drogbacité today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Marco. I'm touched.
I'll try and do the dance now. I may have tried the dance. Okay, yes, I did. But I'm not going to show you how ridiculous I look. I will, though, post a video of Didier Drogba doing it. Moving right along now to some of my other favorite footy words and phrases. Let's start in Brazil.
Hora da onça beber água.
Thank you, William, for saving me from trying to speak Portuguese. Literally, it means the time that the jaguar drinks water, meaning the moment of truth, the decisive hour. And that time is pretty much upon us. A tip of the hat to the BBC's Tim Vickery for that one. He lives in Brazil and he knows his footy phrases. Okay, next one, handbags. I love this term. It's strictly British English, and it refers to an argument between players that kind of nearly spills over into a fight, but doesn't. There's, you know, fiery talk, the bumping of shoulders, maybe even forehead-to-forehead contact. But the idea is that it's controlled and swiftly forgotten. I've heard David Beckham say it. Oh, it was just handbags. Okay, the next word is Spanish, and it works really well for this World Cup because it's out of Uruguay. It's moñas. It means ringlets. And at some point, I'm not sure how long ago, fans in Latin America, and in Uruguay in particular, demanded that players perform moñas. They were very much performances. They were figure of eight moves, kind of unnecessary, but looked fantastic, you know, really decorative and almost dance routine-y. And the Uruguayan writer Eduardo Galeano, he's written more lyrically about soccer than just about anyone else ever. He tells this great story of how French journalists, when France was playing Uruguay, they tried to get to the bottom of the Uruguayan players' love of moñas, why they were doing it. Because it was intimidating the French players and confusing them. And so these French reporters started asking the Uruguayans, why are you doing this? Where did you learn this from? And the Uruguayan player, the great Uruguayan player, José Leandro Andrade, he is reputed to have told the French reporters that the players trained for this move by chasing chickens. You know, chickens were running away and they were making these S shapes as they were trying to escape the clutches of the Uruguayans. And the reporters believed it and they wrote about it. Isn't that fantastic? I have to quote directly here from Galeano. Here goes. The ringlet wasn't just a piece of tolerated mischief. It was a joy the crowd demanded. Today, such works of art are outlawed, or at least viewed with grave suspicion as selfish exhibitionism, a betrayal of team spirit, and utterly useless against the iron defensive systems of modern soccer. Finally, two quotes, one famous, one not. The famous, well, it's so good that it doesn't really matter how many times you've heard it before. It's just magical. The person who said it was, he was called Bill Shankly. He was one of the first great Scottish managers who worked in the English club game. He was manager of Liverpool for many, many years. This is what he said. Football is not a matter of life and death. It's much more important than that. I just love that. And now the other quote, the unknown one. I say unknown because it was said to me. I put it in a report, but that's as far as it went. I was lucky enough to cover a World Cup. It was 2002 in Japan and South Korea. And it was an especially fantastic time to be in South Korea. The entire nation seemed to be out on the streets, rooting for the home team. In fact, in North Korea even, they showed a couple of games on TV. That was unprecedented. Anyways, in the middle of South Korea's incredibly unlikely run all the way to the semifinals, I remember going to a campus and interviewing a bunch of college students about what South Korea's success meant to them. And this one student, he said something that really stuck with me. He told me that he didn't care about soccer, but the World Cup had sucked him in because it was quite clearly changing his country. For the first time in my life, he told me, I am proud to be Korean. I remember that comment above anything else that was said at any news conferences with any of those players or coaches, anything like that. It just got to the attraction of the World Cup, the way it goes way beyond soccer, which is just as well because the quality of the soccer isn't always that good at the World Cup. That's not the point. There's so much else at play here, like nationalism. That, of course, can be ugly. Fans and players, they can get insanely frenzied when their countrymen are kicking a football. But in this case, the nationalism was pretty benign and simple. For the first time in my life, I'm proud to be Korean. Okay, that's it. Enjoy the World Cup, if that's your thing. Also, enjoy some of the other podcasts in our new network, Soundworks. You'll find all of them at soundworks.org. I'll have more on soccer and language, including that Drogba Cité video, at pri.org/language. The World in Words has a Facebook page too, and I'm on Twitter. My handle is Patricox, PatriCox. See you next time.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.